There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste. Or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's going on? And we are back. Welcome into the Pelicans podcast presented by SeatGeek on this Monday. I'm Daniel Salerson alongside my co-host Jim Eichenhofer of Pelicans.com. We are back as we are just a week and a half away from the NBA draft on July 29th as the Pelicans will have the number 10 overall pick in the 2021 NBA draft. And we're going to take you 1 through 9 with a media member, broadcaster, writer of teams 1 through 9 as we get you ready for next week's draft. And joining us today is Rod Beard, Pistons beat writer for the Detroit News. Rod, I appreciate you being our first guest here on the Draft Preview Show. How are you?
I'm feeling pretty good about this pick, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. I feel like you have the easiest job right now, as we kind of don't really do mock drafts, but I feel like with the number one pick, it seems like this year it's pretty clear cut. Is that the same for you as far as Cade Cunningham is concerned?
Yeah, I think it's fairly clear cut unless somebody just comes with a grandfather and a bounty of a trade package to make it just unbelievable that you have to trade that pick.
What makes Cade Cunningham the most attractive pick for the Detroit Pistons? How does he fit in with what Detroit has, which is, as we talked about before this taping, this Pistons team has had a lot of turnover in the last couple of years.
Yeah, they completely turned the roster over. There's only one player left from the roster 2 years ago. And I think where Cade fits best is that he can play a lot of different positions for them. He's known as a point guard, but at 6'8", 225, he can move around and he can play some shooting guard. He can play small forward. He might be able to guard some power forwards in a smaller lineup. So I think that versatility and the ability to handle the ball is something that Coach Dwayne Casey likes and that he can check those boxes for you.
Before I go to Jim, you talk about, you know, basically godfather offers as far as trading number one pick. Has there been any sense that anyone has offered anything to Detroit for number one? Are they even listening to those just to maybe say, hey, you never know what kind of deal someone's bringing to them? Or are they basically saying we're going with Cade and that's final?
Well, I think the thing on lottery night was that general manager Troy Weaver said that he would listen to offers and the trade is possible and they're still going to work out five guys. And I think there is some interest in a Jalen Green or a Mobley, but it's still about what package can you put together. And for me, if I were the GM, you'd have to give me the number two or number three pick. And that's the starting point of any discussion is that if I like Green or if I like Mobley, those are the only two other guys that I'm trading out of that pick for, or an established maybe all-star fringe, all-star type player. I don't think very many teams are going to give that up for an unproven rookie. So that's where the discussion starts with me. And I don't think it's very hot. The conversations and the trade talk is very hot out there. So I think that's where it's just going to lead back to Cunningham is don't make this harder than it needs to be. The guy is right there for you. He's a franchise sort of guy, a projected all-star. Don't mess this up and try to be too cute with it.
It's funny. I don't think it's exactly the same situation as what the Pelicans were in 2 years ago based on, you know, weighing different options and that kind of thing. But if you go back to a couple of years ago, the Pelicans never really came out and said that they were drafting Zion Williamson officially. It wasn't something that was really announced until the moment that they were on stage, but somehow there were all kinds of Zion banners in New Orleans, I guess, that were created, you know, right the exact second that the pick was announced. So that was kind of funny. You mentioned a second ago just the fit as far as Cade Cunningham, if he is the pick with the Pistons. What does that mean for Killian Hayes? I mean, it's not often that a team drafts a guy in the lottery at pretty much the same position. I know you mentioned Cade Cunningham's versatility, but how are those two guys gonna play together, and what impact does that make?
Well, toward the end of the season last year, Killian Hayes played off the ball a little bit more, and he looked more comfortable than he did as the main ball handler and point guard. So I don't think he's just a point guard. I think he's a facilitator. And with Dwayne Casey's history, he's done it in Toronto, and he's done it with the Pistons as well, is that he likes to have multiple ball handlers, multiple point guards, if you will, on the court at the same time to try to go pick and roll on the weak side if the ball gets rotated around. So I think it's just the fit is there. And again, they don't have a strong starting two guard. And I think Cade can just fit in there as the other guy. And again, that's where the conversation starts with Jalen Green, too, is that if you be that main facilitator and you want something different, then that's where you can consider Jalen Green. But again, I think Cunningham shooting 40%+ from three in college, I think that translates into the NBA as well. And again, that just seems to be the best fit for me.
Going back to really not that long ago, basically November of last year was when the 2020 draft happened. I remember Killian Hayes had a lot of supporters and a lot of people that projected him as maybe one of the best players in the draft. I think those same analysts are disappointed that he didn't get to play a lot last year because of injury, obviously. But when you look back at November in terms of the Pistons draft and who the guys they got in the first round, what's your analysis of how they did? It seemed like that was really one of the more encouraging aspects of last season for the Pistons.
Well, it checked two boxes for me. One, with Troy Weaver as the general manager, being able to evaluate talent, and people liked Isaiah Stewart as a potential kind of guy who could come in and help out. But to make an all-rookie team, second team all-rookie team, just shows you what Weaver can do. And then to trade in to get the number 19 pick and get Sadiq Bey, who was first team all-rookie and also was on the select team for Team USA preparing for the Olympics. I mean, that again, that shows you the level of talent and the evaluation that he had to find two guys at 16 and 19 who could come in and help your roster immediately and to be two kind of shining stars that you want to build the rest of your roster around and your future around too.
It seemed like people were a little confused by what Detroit did at the beginning of the offseason. I know it was a super brief one for a lot of teams last year in terms of letting Bruce Brown go and letting Christian Wood go. But looking back at it now, I mean, overall, how do you think the Detroit fan base and the media look at the rebuilding project that they kind of started? You could kind of say last year was year one. What do you think people's assessment is of that and the optimism that people have about the way that they're kind of building right now?
Well, I think there is supreme optimism because he was able to flip the whole roster over in 1 year. Stan Van Gundy had done the same thing here, and it took him 2 or 3 years to really get to the same point where he had a roster that he was comfortable with and players that he felt he could develop. And again, looking at the young guys that Troy Weaver has brought in and Dwayne Casey's ability to develop players, you feel like there's a good synergy there and those guys really fit and understand what each other want and how it's going to happen in the next couple of years. Casey signed an extension to add another year to his contract. He's got 3 more years. So you can see where there's something now that there's a timeline that fits. These rookies are not going to have to go through another couple of coaches before they get to their third or fourth year. So it really feels like the rebuild has some structure. It has some definition. And the fans have a serious sense of where this can go in the next couple of years.
Ron, before I let you go, I apologize for asking you such a personal question, but this is a question that Dwayne Casey's been asking some of the prospects. Do you make your bed in the morning? Is that something? How do you start your day? Just want to make sure that you're ready to go, because I think that's important for Dwayne Casey, and I hope Cade Cunningham is the guy that makes his bed in the morning.
Well, I am not a morning bed maker, but I get the point that they're trying to make is that it says how organized you are, how you plan out your day. And if you get one thing accomplished first thing in the morning, then it builds on the rest of your day. That's just not me. I feel like I'm going to get back into bed at some point, maybe in the afternoon, maybe in the evening, who knows? But yeah, I'm not an everyday morning bed maker. I'll make it on Saturday or Sunday, but during the week, generally, no.
I'm the same way. Jim, are you a bed maker in the morning? I can see you as one.
No, actually, I'm in the same boat as Rod. I think his answer was pretty much exactly what I would say. But I enjoyed that tweet, especially the people arguing in the comments about whether you should or should not. So that was hilarious to read people's takes. And I was also entertained by the fact that people are so adamant about it. I did not realize how strongly people feel about that topic, but I learned that from the discussion underneath that tweet. So I thought that was really fun.
Well, even better was the people who were sending these mock sort of, here's Cade Cunningham's bed and it's all made up, or here's Jalen Green's bed and it's all made up. So this is why you should pick them. It's an interview question. People take it out of context, but you know, Twitter's going to Twitter. Twitter's going to do what it does.
I'm glad that it only took a Dwayne Casey talking about it to make it a grand discussion on whether people make their bed or not. But it's definitely interesting to see what kind of questions are out there. It's definitely something that funny that you mentioned, just people on Twitter being on Twitter. That's Rod Beard, Pistons beat writer for the Detroit News. You can follow him on Twitter at DET News Rod Beard. Again, a great follow for all your Detroit fans and just for NBA fans in general. Rod, I really appreciate the time. Enjoy the draft. Hopefully you're able to go to the Barclays Center and enjoy it. But if not, best of luck in Detroit for the draft.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys. It's been fun. Yeah.
All right, great stuff again from Rod Beard as we will do this again leading up to next Thursday's draft on July 29th. Again, we'll have coverage for you on the radio side on ESPN New Orleans as part of our draft coverage. Of course, Jim will be a part of it somehow, whether it's in Brooklyn, whether it's in New Orleans, or whether it's from his beautiful chateau at an undisclosed location. But Jim, we haven't talked in a while. You know, you were on vacation. I added another human being to my family in the last couple of weeks here. How's the offseason treating you?
It's been great. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people feel this way, that it was good to kind of get away for a while. And maybe even though it never really completely escapes the back of your mind somewhere, to not maybe focus on basketball and the Pelicans for a little bit was good. Congratulations on your second youngster that you mentioned that you brought into the world. That's very outstanding news. I did not accomplish anything nearly that important during the last couple of weeks, but nonetheless, it was a great break, and I'm really looking forward to these next few weeks. I mean, it's really kind of mind-blowing when you think about what's going to happen in these next few weeks, where you have major news on the coaching front at some point, the draft obviously next Thursday, free agency starting right after that, summer league is starting August 8th. I mean, the next month or so is going to be so packed with news and information, and I'm kind of looking forward to, as I'm sure a lot of people are, of turning the page, which we've really already done as far as talking about next season.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned it. You know, we talk about our off season, but with how the season ended in mid-May compared to mid-April for teams that don't make the playoffs, you lost a month right there. And by no way am I complaining, but everything has kind of shifted. I mean, you're talking about guys that potentially could be going right from the NBA Finals to the Olympics, and then the season going back to starting at a normal time. I think the reports were October 19th for the first regular season game, with training camp beginning at the end of September. And so you're right. Draft's going to hit. Free agency's going to hit. Summer league's going to hit. And then the schedule's going to come out too, not too long after that, where come September time is maybe you have a chance to catch your breath a little bit before training camp starts. But it's going to be crazy. And what's crazy is we're here on July 19th and the NBA Finals is still going on. But, Jim, you know, there's been a lot of debate as far as the teams left in the NBA Finals, whether it's good for basketball, good for TV ratings. We've gone through this before as far as how ridiculous people worry about TV ratings. But I don't know about you. I've really enjoyed these NBA Finals from not only just the two teams, but the basketball that's being played. I mean, Game 5 was phenomenal the other night.
It was. I mean, it was one of the better NBA Finals games, I think, of the last, say, 10 years or so. As far as the postseason goes, I know we probably talked about this a little bit in June, back when there were a few more teams still playing, but I love the unpredictability of this season. And I love the fact that we're seeing some new faces, some new star players that are at the beginning of their career that are really making a name for themselves, such as Devin Booker and Trae Young was able to get the Hawks to the Eastern Conference Finals. So it's been great. And I think for people in New Orleans, I probably should only speak for myself, but I think I feel pretty confident that a lot of fans in New Orleans like the fact that there's some small market teams that have made the finals. Milwaukee's a very small market. And some of the super teams were knocked out earlier. Some of the teams that had players that masterminded a plan to get together and play together and, you know, go deep in the playoffs and make the finals and win a championship. Pretty much all of those plans were negated by the results of what happened in the postseason. So I've been this is one of the most enjoyable playoffs to me that I've seen in a long time. It's been great. And the games have been really good too, as far as maybe not always the quality of play, but the closeness of the games. I feel like we've had a lot of really good moments. Game 7, Milwaukee-Brooklyn was one of the cooler ends of games I've seen in a long time for that to go to overtime. You don't get too many Game 7 overtimes. So it's just been great across the board. And now we're interested to see how this thing will end up in the next couple of days.
Yeah, absolutely. Could end tomorrow night here for the Phoenix Suns, but maybe they can force a Game 7, give us just an extra couple of days of basketball. But good thing is the Olympics are right around the corner too. So there will be some basketball no matter what here in the next couple of weeks. Before I let you go, you know, we're talking about the NBA draft and kind of lining up our calendar here as we'll go 1 through 5. And we'll also add the number 8 pick on Friday with the Orlando Magic, since they have 2 picks in the top 10. But, you know, you've been posting mock drafts. You've been listening to a lot of player prospect interviews. When you're trying to gauge these first 10 picks in the depth of it, we talk every year about how deep these drafts are, or is it very top heavy, or can you get some value at certain positions? What are you learning about these mock drafts and what you're seeing as far as what could be the Pelicans' options at number 10, and we'll get to them next week before the draft starts, but kind of what are you gauging as far as, it doesn't seem like there's a consensus number 10 pick, but there's a wide variety of players that could be there for the Pelicans to draft there at number 10.
Yeah, I think the one thing that has been somewhat clear from the beginning of this process is that, generally speaking, NBA draft analysts are in agreement about the top 5 or 6 guys. The order changes quite a bit in terms of, you know, everyone has Cade Cunningham number 1, but 2 through 5, the order kind of jumbles and gets mixed up a little bit. And then at 6, you might see the same name pretty frequently. But after that, I think there's a big difference of opinion. So as you mentioned, there are a lot of different possibilities at number 10 in terms of the Pelicans picking, partly because there's just a wide range of opinions on, you know, who's the 7th best player, who's the 15th best player. We're never going to be able to do this, but I would love to be able to get behind the scenes and see how the various NBA teams that are picking, say, in the top 20, how they have their big boards arranged in terms of, after the top 5 or 6, who do they think is the 7th best player? Because we can only go by what draft analysts say. We don't have access to, obviously, NBA front offices, but I'm curious to know whether how similar the difference of opinion is between, you know, draft experts and the people that are actually going to be doing the picks. So it's very difficult to project, I think, what the Pelicans will do at 10, partly because you don't know who's going to be available. You don't know which guys are going to be picked in the top 9, but maybe we'll figure that out a little bit more as we talk to the 8 teams that are comprising the 9 picks that go right before the Pelicans on the board.
And I think what's interesting about the NBA draft compared to the NFL draft is, most likely when you go through NFL mock drafts, is you're basing these picks on positions of need. Again, it's easy in the NFL to identify this team needs an offensive, you know, lineman. This team needs a tight end. This team needs a quarterback. But in the NBA, I feel like now it's changing from positional needs to skill set needs. And that's something even the Pelicans will be looking at later down the road, is shooting. Is that the number one objective here, to fill not only a number 10, but with those second round picks? Do you trade it away? But I feel like in the NBA, it's turned to this guy is available, we need a point guard, we're going to get him. It's no, this guy is best available, he fits the skill set we need, and that's who we're going to draft. I think that's going to be very interesting come this year's draft.
I mean, there's no doubt that, especially even when you look at the second round of the draft, where the Pelicans have 4 picks this year, you see so many mock drafts where they talk about shooting, not just for the Pelicans, but for everyone. I think you're going to see maybe one of the trends is going to be more of the second round picks will be that guy who doesn't necessarily have like a full well-rounded game, but is a knockdown shooter. The teams are going to start spending more of those picks on those guys, because as we've all seen and discussed at length, the importance of the 3-point shot just continues to climb and teams continue to take more and more. But in terms of what you said, the common popular phrase is becoming positionless basketball. And I think opposed to 10, 15 years ago, when teams kind of tried to slot in a prototypical guy at every position and stick with kind of a lineup that had all 5 positions filled, you see so many more lineups now with 3 guards on the court and no centers. And there's so many different combinations that I think that's a big factor why teams aren't just looking at it like, okay, we have this specific positional slot that we need to fit this specific guy into. It's so much more fluid now, where teams have a lot more flexibility. I mean, I think we saw the Pelicans at times have this past season have 3 point guards on the court at the same time, which was pretty much unheard of. But you're seeing that a lot more now than you are seeing. You're rarely ever seeing like three bigs on the court. That probably almost never happens in the entire NBA. I know people made a big deal about the Nuggets having a starting lineup that had like three or four guys that were 6'10 or over, but that's a thing of the past. I feel like we're never going to see that again, the way that the league is trending right now, where it's all about shooting, like you said, skill and versatility of being able to cover a lot of different positions, and quickness, I think, has never been as important as it is now, especially at the defensive end.
Should be an interesting NBA draft, that's for sure. And we're going to be the place to go, as the Pelicans have the number 10 overall pick. And like Jim mentioned, we'll go 1 through 9. That means tomorrow we'll check in with the Houston Rockets and what they could do at number 2, basing on the consensus pick of number 1 with Cade Cunningham. Houston's pretty much the first team on the clock as far as how they'll set the tone and how the dominoes will fall after their pick. And then we'll check in with the Cleveland Cavaliers on Wednesday. The Toronto Raptors, who are normally not in this position, we'll check in with them on Thursday. And then the Orlando Magic, as we mentioned, they have number 5 and number 8. So we'll get those 2 picks. And again, it's not really a mock draft, but maybe what these teams can do with those picks leading up to the Pelicans at number 10. So glad to have Jim back. Glad to have you back here, as our podcast will continue here for the next couple of weeks, probably even after, with free agency. And we're glad you're making us a part of your day. You can access the show on iTunes, of course, also on Pelicans.com and the Pelicans mobile app. Until tomorrow, for Jim, big thanks to Rod Beard of the Detroit News. I'm Daniel Salerson. Thanks for listening to the Pelicans podcast presented by SeatGeek.